Hello there, and welcome back to Techonomics. I'm the host of this joint, Jason Middleton. We're about to finish up our chat with Drew Curtis, founder of FARC and one-time candidate for Kentucky governor, finishing third. First, some housekeeping. This show is broadcast and podcast, a little foot in the legacy, a little foot in the digital, if you will. This and all of our segments live on iTunes and Stitcher, if you prefer the podcast edition. We broadcast on Sundays at noon on KGO 810 AM, also KGORadio.com. And sometimes there's a rebroadcast. Well, that's a movable feast. We also do the socials. We have links and a weekly playlist of the music that we use at facebook.com/techonomicsradio. And I'm on the Twitters at KGO Jason. Let's musically interlude for a second to get us back in the mood for Drew. We started a conversation with Drew Curtis around the concept of a universal basic income. That's basically where every working age citizen would receive a basic monthly income from the government, mostly in response to the coming wave of automation and a shrinking of the human labor market. Sounds like socialism, maybe, but it's actually more of a libertarian idea, at least in theory. Now, after this next short segment with Drew, we'll get into fake news and Russian disinformation campaigns. First, we pick up the tape with Drew talking about how a universal monthly wage could run into issues after implementation.
Over the course of time, if pricing eats into that, we're in a situation where now we have no social safety net and we're spending a ton of money on something that's getting us nothing.
Right.
So that would be my big concern. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't do it. One of the solutions that we came up with a bunch of solutions, and the UBI is one of them. One of the other ones is it was actually suggested by Astro Teller over at Google. Better sandboxing, which is a coding term for when you do an update to a live system, like our traffic control, you don't just like roll it out and see what happens.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's a bad idea. So you put it in a testing environment first and see how it goes. And for some reason, and this boggles my mind, but this is never done with policy for some reason.
That's true.
I can't figure it out. Like, you know, what they ought to do. But there are, like, it's not saying it never happens, but it's never the first thing that occurs to a politician.
Right.
They always want to roll out this law that changes everything for everybody all at once, untested or not.
Yes.
And that causes a lot of damage sometimes.
Unintended consequences.
Yeah. So the idea would be is like, let's try it out somewhere. Let's see if it'll work. And let's try it out somewhere different. So like, say like drop it into like Wichita and then Long Island and then, you know, Phoenix or something, you know, and then let's see how that goes. And it turns out, or just sit around and wait and let other people test it out. So for example, like Finland's running a test right now.
Yes, it is.
There's a city in the Netherlands, I think. I can't remember which one it is. They're also getting ready to do it. So we could also just sit back and watch how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to do it. I mean, this is one of those things where you don't have to be the first one there.
Right.
You know, if it happens to work, you're good to go.
Yeah, but for a lot of Americans, there's a little bit of stink on Finland because it's democratic socialism from Scandinavia.
Yeah, well, like I said, 25% unemployment will change your mind. So, like I said, and so that's what I tell people. It's like, rather than working on convincing people now, definitely have the conversations.
Yes.
Just prepare the policy and have it ready because your argument will be made for you rapidly if we're right about the worst case.
All right. Well, I'm glad to have your opinion on the record because I'll be honest, a lot of people I have on the show, after the mics are off, we will have this conversation.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But they don't want to be on the record talking about it right now. A lot of these are tech people, though, too.
Yeah, right,
And so everybody in tech right now has kind of their head down.
Yeah.
Unless you're a CEO of a mature company, everybody else is just kind of waiting to see what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is a great conversation that needs to keep happening. So I'm glad, I'm glad you're addressing it.
And there's a meta discussion based on what you just said, which is the reason why they don't want to talk about it is because it drifts from policy to politics. So now there are strong opinions about this. And my thing is, this is where we lose track of what we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that being afraid to have a discussion about this because people are going to have some absurd reaction to it is problematic. I think we need to discuss it. And I think we need to be willing to discuss ideas that we don't think will work. Because if we don't, you know, we're going to miss some stuff. And the best part about it is that it's not so much the concept, it's the implementation. And that's sort of the problems I've been voicing about it is that it's not like it's a bad idea. It's not even like it's a terrible idea, but if implemented improperly, it's a bad idea.
Yes, right.
And therein lies the issue. There's the other one I found out was that you got to worry about like what people are going to spend the money on. Like, here's what I'm not advocating. Food stamps are ridiculous. Not the way they have them, but the regulations on them. I mean, it's like a phone book worth of stuff. Like, here's what you can buy. Here's what you can't buy.
Right, yeah.
And it's kind of demeaning and ridiculous. And on top of that, it requires you to cook, which if you're working two minimum wage jobs and barely scraping by, you don't have time for that.
No.
We should just cut them a check. Like, I would start with food stamps and give it to everyone now. Like, that's how you can kind of trickle this in. Because people who are wealthier, it's going to go right back out in tax. So this isn't like you're going to have to spend all that money.
Right.
But then get to health insurance. And therein lies a problem. So when I was 24, I ran my car into a telephone pole. And I went to the insurance, and they gave me a $1,200 check to fix it, and I drove out of there, and I spent it on beer.
Yeah.
And I had a car with a dent in it for 5 years.
Right.
For young people particularly, health insurance is exactly the same way. So if you got one blanket check and say,
right,
this is also for something that I don't really think I need,
right,
I might not get it.
Right.
And so that's another thing that we got to consider there, too. I wouldn't stack it up with a ton of like rules and regulations, but maybe healthcare is a different bucket.
Well, you saw how the individual mandate worked out.
Yeah.
Not great.
Yeah. Again, but that's an implementation problem again. Like, it is,
exactly,
wasn't a bad idea. The theory was pretty good. The execution was wrong. And there's different reasons for why that happened. It was sort of sabotaged. It was sort of not well thought out. But the upshot, mm-hmm, is that, again, going back to the healthcare thing, that's not a bad idea.
Right.
They just didn't stick the landing on it.
That was Drew Curtis, founder of FARC.com and Slayer of Idle Time. Drew's working on a book that will help people outside the Silicon Valley bubble deal with the imminent issues that are coming at us. There are links to Drew's various assets at facebook.com/techonomicsradio. Coming up right now, though, Russian disinformation. Vera Zakim is a research scientist with CNA's Center for Stability and Development. That's a research organization charged with analyzing national security and public policy problems. She specializes in influence and information operations, as well as hybrid warfare. Here's the first part of our chat with Vera.
Vera Zakim, I'm a research scientist with CNA, Center for Strategic Studies. CNA is a non-for-profit research and analysis organization. We work with the U.S. government and other organizations in providing pressing advice on foreign policy and national security challenges.
Foreign policy, and you said challenges there, right?
I think policy and national security.
Right on.
That's correct.
There's a 2-inch headline floating around the last few months when it comes to challenges to some things. And one of the challenges, frankly, is reality and how media is dealing with reality and the facts that it's been receiving, or alternate facts, depending on how you look at it. So can we help define fake news?
Sure. Fake news has been a phenomenon that's existed for many decades, arguably, but it's, mm-hmm, certainly become part of our lexicon and our society during our elections. But the idea of fake news or alternative facts or disinformation,
well, okay,
whichever word you want to use.
I remember that from the 80s.
Yeah. It is really to instill fear, to confuse audiences, to blur false and truth. So you're not really sure what is true and what is falsehood. And at the end of the day, you're kind of unsure on what to believe in.
Mm.
And the idea about it, what's really scary about it, is that when the information is coming at you at nanoseconds, super fast, we're living in a 24/7 media cycle.
Right.
And the idea also in the social media environment where, you know, we see something catchy, we see something flashy, our immediate response is to click on it. And without really thinking about it in many aspects, we end up sharing that information to many people. And oftentimes, the real danger here is if it comes from trusted colleagues, friends, and family,
right,
we are more likely to share that information, whether we believe if it's true or false.
Well, you just described how malware gets shared,
yes,
as well,
exactly,
right?
And it's a blurry line, right? Because, I mean, if you think about what happened in the elections with Russia, but allegedly, you know, still investigating, obviously, with Russia being,
right,
involved, you know, it started with the hack and the leaks, right?
Yes.
In the last couple of months of the election, it was continuously circling around, and we just couldn't, you know, people just didn't know what is true or false.
Mm-hmm.
And based on whatever preconceived notions that folks have, they will believe what they believe without actually fact-checking the information and fact-checking the data.
Right.
And so, you know, in Russian, the word is dezinformatsiya. And because Russians have been doing this for a very long time.
Right. You're bringing that perspective that this is not a new thing. This is just a new spike in activity around this. Is that fair to say?
That is correct. That is absolutely correct.
Okay.
The idea is, you know, as I was even myself, what really, I mean, I've been doing research and I've been engaged on the topic of how media influences targeted populations in societies in U.S. and around the world, particularly in Europe, and how both our adversaries use media as a tool for manipulation. Because if you think about it, media is a phenomenal tool,
mm-hmm,
and depends on perception it can be used pretty widely.
Right.
But with Russia, what really got me interested most recently with this whole phenomenon of disinformation and fake news, since our election, you all of a sudden, it's like we're waking up to this phenomenon and people don't know how to deal with it. But the reality is with Russia, they've been involved with this certainly since the Cold War, but very much very targeted in the last decade. I mean, there's several examples. I mean, I'll just give you a couple of them. In Georgia, they used hacking and picture defacement during the Russian-Georgia War in 2008. The Russians were very successful in their information operation and cyber campaign that included spreading conspiracy theories and fake news. In Ukraine, there were constant conspiracy theories during the Crimea crisis, and as well as, if you recall, the Malaysia airline incident that occurred. And then even if, you know, just take us to the Balkans, where you have Montenegro, you have Macedonia and Serbia. All of those countries have been victims of Russian disinformation. And the real fear here is that just like we saw in our elections, this potentially also could happen and perhaps is already happening in Western Europe.
That's the first part of our chat with Vera Zakum. She specializes in influence and information operations. She also knows about hybrid warfare. That means disinformation campaigns, fake news. Coming up after the break, we have more with Vera Zakum about Russian influence in and around its former member states of the Soviet Union, as well as Russian interest in Western Europe and American politics. That's next on Techonomics. I'm Jason Middleton. Please come on back.